So I'll be starting talking about the demon of materialism. It's funny that Tarsiri chose this one for me. So. 1 month ago, I gave a talk a bit longer on the dangers of dogmatism and fanaticism and in our modern world. And I think there is some relation in this. It's interesting, but lately in the Trirana movement, there have been very similar talks around this subject, and I'm quite passionate about this subject, and I'll get into it. So what is materialism, and what does taming the demon of materialism entails? Well, Artusi mentioned a little bit, but it's very interesting to see in the history of materialism, at least in Western culture, seems to be tracked to the Greeks, especially the Presocratics and the very beginnings of philosophy, with Socrates, with the Presocratics, challenging the superstitions of the mythic explanations of the universe, of the very start of the universe. In a way, this is how trying to bring more rational explanations to our everyday life and the constitution of the universe, the beginning of the universe. As an antithesis of superstitions, the literalism of the Greek mythology, and faith, religious faith in a way. Recently I read a book, it's really beautiful, it's by Pierre Hadot, it's called Philosophy as a Way of Life. And I love this book because he shows something quite different of the idea we got about philosophy. He said that ancient philosophy is something very different of our common understanding of philosophy, just as a mere philosophical discourse divided very systematically into very different branches. So for ancient times, it was very much a way of life. It was very much a spiritual practice, a spiritual experience, a religious experience. And I found this quite interesting because we used to think that Socrates, the great exponent of philosophy, rational thought, was a materialist, was a complete, how could the word, anti-spiritualist, and that's really not the case. In philosophy, the theory of materialism holds that the only thing that exists is matter, that all things are composed of material, and all phenomena, including consciousness, are the result of interactions. Thoughts, sensations, and emotions are merely products of biochemical reactions of the brain. So in this way, it's regarded as reductionist, reducing all experience just into matter. And materialism is usually contrasted with idealism. It's quite a big word, I won't go into it. But in general, to spiritual and theistic views, mainly to the denial of the existence of transmaterial or metaphysical substance, like the existence of God and the soul. And for this very reason, Buddhism, being atheistic and fundamentally grounded in the principle of paticca samuppada, conditioned co-production, the principle of anatta, is usually regarded as with materialistic views. Just until recent decades, this has been quite challenged. But even now, some over-enthusiastic rationalists insist in seeing Buddhism as a form of humanistic materialism. But the deeper exploration of Buddhist tradition, even the Pali Canon that usually is regarded as more rational, the early Buddhism, is clearly brings the occurrence of supranatural entities. With all these devas, many different hierarchies of the gods, and the three-dimensional nature of the universe and existence. That is Kamaloka, the world of physical, sensual forms, Rupaloka, the world of form, or better said, the world of non-ordinary and higher states of mind, and the Arupaloka is rather mysterious, but even more refined states of mind. And there are many other references to that. They call, we could put it like mundane world, samsara, and transcendental world, lokuttara. But I wouldn't like to go into too many technicisms. Rather, it's more important, I think, so to question ourselves, what is the problem of materialistic views? Some people argue, especially in the movement of free thinkers or humanist, especially materialist, that we don't need transcendental or spiritual views to be ethical and promote higher values and culture, especially if we read a little bit of history. History shows us that in the name of God, religion, and many superstitions, many cruel and horrific acts have been made, with millions of killings, unspeakable tortures, and devastation of cultural heritages and of several civilizations. But that's easier said in theory than proven in practice. We tend many times to forget that our views have stronger implications in everyday life than most people suspect. So I really want to emphasize this point. Believing that there isn't anything but matter doesn't just throw away the dirty water of superstition, dogmatism, and fanaticism, but it throws away the baby, in a way to speak, of spiritual values and hedonism. And sorry, spiritual values and idealism. Hedonism. It's a split of mine. Yeah. So there are mainly four implications to Mary's materialistic views. Oh, that's what I thought. One is nihilism. Second, rampant hedonism, cynicism or extreme skepticism, and indifference. And I link this indifference with pseudo-egalitarianism, which all of them are related in one way or another. So what is nihilism? Usually it's associated with materialistic view of existence, which negates one or more meaningful aspects of life. It denies an objective purpose or intrinsic value of life. So since all things in the universe are reduced to matter and under mere physical laws, life with its consciousness and amazing cultural and spiritual expression are seen as mere coincidence or lucky accident without further spiritual or transcendental meaning. I don't know about you, but for me it has been very clear in my almost 10 years as Buddhist that at times when I've been overemphasized my spiritual life as pure restrainment, renunciation and the mean intellectual understanding of the lakshanas unsatisfactoriness, impermanence and insubstantiality with the positive and evocative ideals of the spiral path, especially the bodhisattva ideal, the importance of shraddha or faith, the brahma viharas, all based in the positive emotions of loving kindness and the strong and almost lying intuition of the possibility of rebirth. Well, all these, this insistence on renunciation, on satisfactoriness, without these positive aspects, have led me to a very dry and depressing times in my spiritual practice. So I've been receiving quite a lot of feedback from very good friends from my own precepts. And in my own experience, I've been able to taste this famous saying of Bante, based on Buddha himself, that the eternalists have a better and easier grasp of the Dharma practice. I am convinced that even with when eternalism is certainly one extreme of the middle way, annihilationism, what that means, the belief that there is nothing after death or beyond the body, and its associated nihilism, is far more dangerous and easy to get trapped, especially in modern times, where we have got cut off by the indiscriminative ideologies and overrated values of individualism, democracy, and pseudo-egalitarianism. So many many scholars, philosophers say that they come as a result of the ideals of French Revolution, the Enlightenment era, the Nietzschean death of God, existentialism, positivism, etc. So, which all these seem to be originated as reactions to extremism of organized religions, political ideologies, and the abuses of speculative metaphysics in the history of philosophy. However, this is just the philosophical background, since most people don't even think about it. We just follow the mainstream message and associated values of materialism in the form of consumerism and savage capitalism. We tend to believe that the message of the advertising industry, that material things give us happiness, that's supposed to increase our sex appeal, give us comfort, security and excitement, from fashionable clothes and electronic gadgets to newer diets and treats, a non-read list of books or barely listened collection of music, etc. Enough to see the adverts in the cinema or TV. There is a lot of intelligence put into manipulate the human psyche and longings. We just want to be happy, and they do all they can to convince us to buy our way to happiness. So how surrealist is that Coca-Cola managed to sell us dark colored water full of sugar and toxins, and we love it. So what do I mean by rampant hedonism, the second point? I mean the compulsion to continually chase immediate pleasure no matter the consequences. That comes precisely from the belief that there is no further meaning in this life beyond the experience of the body, the senses, survival. Put it crudely, eating, copulating, and defecating. So, as a materialist would say, there is no afterlife, no God or spiritual meaning, neither moral consequences to our choices. So let's just party, sex and rock and roll. We want to buy our happiness rather than earn it. We tend to undermine and forget the crucial factor that effort and learning process has in happiness. Bante has talked quite a lot about it, and the positive efforts, the Buddhist tradition, but not just that. Modern psychologists and philosophy, even economists, have been doing serious research on the subject of happiness, and clearly highlight the importance of effort and the learning process to bring real happiness. So, from nihilism comes also radical skepticism and cynicism. And I don't mean by these the philosophical schools. That's completely different, and they are actually bring something quite positive. I mean it's more the popular, modern understanding as the attitude of a jaded negativity and a general distrust of the integrity or professed motive of people and their ideals. I found very interesting and revelatory the first time I heard in a study group that cynicism is mainly frustrated idealism. I'm pretty sure it comes from Bante. I couldn't find the source, but I heard this several times, and really struck me. I could really relate with this in my own experience. So it comes a reaction and response of disappointment to the incongruence between the acts or behavior and the great ideals and values expressed by religious or political movements or people we once admired. So cynicism comes with bitter criticism of the idealist who still tries to influence and affect positively the world we live. How many of us have not been called by our relatives or old friends or acquaintances, naive and even immature, for dedicating our lives to the Dharma or spiritual movement and the spiritual path, trying to transform and influence our world, rather than pursuing our professional careers, amassing money, making a family with a nice house, a nice dog, and expensive holidays. So with cynicism and extreme skepticism comes indifference, a sense of apathy, hopelessness, and impotency on the many world problems and suffering. Where people stop believing, we can make a difference in our world. And with pseudo-egalitarianism, where the possibility of a spiritual hierarchy is denied and reduced at the level of matter, resulting in lack of reverence and receptivity. So pseudo-egalitarianism is portrayed as a sensible or rational attitude, the best option against abuses of power and authority from religious or political institutions, closing our minds and hearts to the obvious possibility of more experienced and spiritually developed people, and from which we can learn and benefit a great deal. So under the pretense of individuality, emotional, intellectual, and spiritual independence, and anti-dogmatism and anti-fanaticism, many people close their hearts to the precious opportunity of a spiritual receptivity. So for me, this is the core meaning of the attitude of discipleship that I know for some people is a bit uncomfortable. But for me, it's a very precious, a very beautiful word, discipleship. And for me, it involves very much this attitude of receptivity to higher values, to people more experienced than us. So in contrast with a mere intellectual understanding or erudition that a scholar may have on Buddhism or any other spiritual matter. So what involves taming the demon of materialism? Well, to start with, we need to learn to share and simplify our lives, cut down artificial needs and meaningless accumulation of material things, knowledge, or exciting and intoxicating experiences. Generosity is clearly the best way to tame this demon, greatly emphasized along all the Buddhist tradition, with dana, generosity, as the first paramita, or perfection, in the bodhisattva path or training. It's said that it comes naturally out of right view, reflection, and insight. So taming the demon of materialism doesn't mean oppose science, but recognize there are limitations to scientific knowledge and sharing it. So holding academic and scientific advances provisionally and with sensibility to spur healthy questioning and anti-dogmatic critique of modern views rather than making it the new dogma, than making science the new dogma. We need to bring the same anti-dogmatic critique as unbiased reflection to all areas of our life, like materialism itself. Look what happens when there is unbridled consumerism, and look at the environmental damage, the limited amount of resources for the exponential growth of the population. According to some research that Artapriya told me, if the entire world were to consume the same amount of resources that USA consumes, we'll need 12 planets. But we only have one planet. And the problem with this is that many have to suffer because of this. Isn't this absurd? Let's look at the current economical crisis that some naively think is over. Have we learned anything from it? Have we learned anything from history? And it's not the first time that this happens. It seems that many just carry on shopping as the best solution of this, as the best solution out of this, like Gordon Brown told us to do so. Isn't this ironic? This is certainly a very tricky situation, but at least we can take further steps to simplify our lives, sharing resources like we do in Buddhist communities and in Windhorst. We also need to open up to the mystery of matter and reality. This is maybe a very important way to tame the demon of materialism, especially for those very keen on anti-dogmatic and views and anti-dogmatic research. And it's very important as well to embrace uncertainty. So modern science hasn't been able to define matter and understand the mystery of matter and energy in relation to consciousness. It's quite famous nowadays. This is a famous enigma in quantum physics of the unpredictability of matter and energy when there is an observer, the famous principle of Heisenberg of incertitude. So we need to give way to Shraddha, or faith, in the way of intuition, investigation, and aesthetic appreciation of greater values and beauty beyond material things. But it is important to reflect and contemplate the possibility that our materialistic views and their implications are more than anything painful disappointment and reaction to the abuses of power or abuses of influence of religious and political institutions that precisely indulge into extremes of dogmatism and fanaticism. So what can we do when we feel so disappointed, we feel cynical behind the history? So we need to relearn to engage more creatively with ideals and spiritual values without naivety or passivity that many fear, mainly through the practice of Kalinamitrata, spiritual friendship, and the actual practice of the very clearly mapped path of Buddhist tradition towards enlightenment in its many forms, from the Four Noble Truths and the Eight Noble Path to the practice of the precepts, meditation, study, reflection, the paramitas, and many other gradual and wonderful practices. So we need to develop spiritual receptivity, welcome and positively identify ourselves as disciples if we are to take seriously our going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. We need to embrace the anguish of uncertainty. Like Padmasambhava said, I do not have, I do not know, I do not understand, in order to really prepare our minds and hearts to the realization of deeper and higher truth of wisdom and compassion, so central in the Buddhist tradition.